WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome. Good evening. And hopefully you had time during this weekend to reflect on the true meaning of Memorial Day. Hopefully it was a productive, thought-provoking Memorial Day. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we have many guests who are going to talk about Memorial Day. Each will have an opportunity to reflect on this day and its importance, its meaning. There'll be other parts of business that we will take care of, other discussions that we'll have. Actually, we'll kick things off with State Representative Dave DeCoste.
Well, thanks for having me, Kevin.
You got it.
It's always a pleasure to be here. You know what? Seriously, because I have never had a situation where you've told me to, censor, ramp down, cool my jets. Just, it's very... There's no censorship in the Kevin Tachi show. We appreciate it.
Okay. Representative will be here. We'll talk a little bit about Memorial Day, any ceremonies, and what it means to him, its importance, the importance of Memorial Day. Talk a little bit about the House budget. Even get his thoughts on a bill providing licenses to immigrants. Now, this supposedly was vetoed by the governor, and I also think that it was overturned by the legislature.
Well, no.
It's pending, correct?
That's pending. Yeah, we're going to vote on it. Yeah.
It's pending. So we'll see where that goes. And we'll talk with the representative about that. We'll even get his take on the budget, which is off to the conference committee after the Senate voted on it last week, and get details on his reelection campaign. Then we'll have retired Navy SEAL Anthony O'Brien Sr. will be in. And many, many years I have seen Tony. I've actually produced programming for local cable TV where he has gone in and interacted with our youth and talked to them about the meaning of Memorial Day. And I see Tony as like a true patriot. And so I have Tony on every Memorial Day. Usually for Veterans Day.
That's a good choice.
Excellent choice.
You have my Tony O'Brien story, right? My Tony O'Brien story, there in the history of Ranger School in the Army, there have been three individuals who have graduated that were over 40. I do not know the third, but I know two of them. General Montero, who was a transportation general in the Army, and Tony O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Made it through Ranger School when they were 40. Now, most guys can't make it through the Ranger School when they're 24.
Right.
But Tony managed to do it when he was over 40, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and he's still in great shape to this day.
He is. He's a good guy. And a good guy.
So we'll speak with him. Hour number two, we'll speak with Travis Parkington, host of Oscar Mike Radio, and Richard Fitz Jr., a Gold Star son, also the writer, producer, director, much, much more, who put together a documentary called 21 Years, A Folded Flag. And the story behind the documentary was to find out what happened to his father, who, while serving in the armed forces, basically lost during a mission, and he wanted to find out what had happened to his father. And so he put this together and sought out information. We'll talk to him about this. Last time we had him on, we actually had him on 4 years ago, and it was in the process. This is an opportunity to talk with him about that and also get his take on what's been like. This is a movie that actually has had resounding success. So we'll talk with him about that, and then we'll close things out. Dr. Vermeil Green, a child development author.
Hey, y'all, I got my dukes on. I'm ready to race. Goma's Mini Bach Massacre. This year's theme is Hillbillies and Moonshiners. So get out them overalls and grab you a straw hat. Meet me at 45 North Carver Road, Wareham, June 25th. The 11th annual Goma's Mini Bike Massacre, brought to you in part by Brennan Smoke Shop. This year's theme is Hillbillies and Moonshiners. Pull starts only 224cc or smaller. Waivers must be signed by noon on the 25th. Racers must dress the theme, Hillbillies and Moonshiners. Food trucks, vendors, live entertainment, live mini bike racing, multiple heats to find this year's winner of the coveted Goma's Mini Bike Massacre. Arkansas, June 25th, 45 North Carver Road in Wareham. Brennan's Smoke Shop assumes no liability for a bunch of people racing mini bikes in a cranberry bog dressed up as hillbillies and moonshiners. So, Zooey! Go get it!
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back. And first up is State Representative Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District, which is currently Noel, Rockland, Hanover. That will change at the beginning of 2023. I believe a small smidge of Hanson will be added into that mix. I'm sure you had a busy day, Representative. You showed me pictures during the break of some of the ceremonies and celebrations that you attended today. What was it like today?
Busy day, but it was fun. We went over to St. Mary's in Rockland, Troop 38. Did a great breakfast, as they always do, before the parade. And went over to Hanson Council on Aging, where they were doing the same thing. And I thanked the people over there. Also got an opportunity to meet a couple of Vietnam veterans, and we distributed a few more Vietnam veteran books. If any of the folks in the audience reach out to our office, but there's a great book that the state puts out, and it's normally given in conjunction with a decoration for all Vietnam veterans. So caught up over there, went to Norwell's ceremony, which was unfortunately simultaneous with Hanover's, so we did not get over Hanover's, but we finished up with the Rockland ceremony, and both all three towns did a terrific job. And it's always fun to finish up with Rockland, because we always start in the east and work towards the west. So,
as a state representative, as an elected official, knowing that you want to be able to go to every community when they're having an event like this, especially Memorial Day, talk about the challenges, because people don't realize the challenges as somebody who's elected, that you want to be there for your constituents, but when you have two events happening at the same time, sometimes it's kind of a, what do I do here?
Well, there's always quite a bit going on, and so I have not managed. I'm as a kid with folks over the Knights of Columbus, I am not Padre Pio, so I cannot bi-locate. But we do our best to get around, and I say we, me and myself, my staff, and a lot of folks who work with us. And so it is fun. I enjoyed this. I should mention that the Norwell Grange had a kickoff this afternoon that was very well attended. And also backing up a little bit, I want to give a well done to all of the veterans organizations in all four towns, and particularly to Dave Osborne in Norwell, and to the whole team. Tim leads it, but the whole team in Rockland, that the Rockland Allied Veterans Council with Jeff Najarian and John Melvin, Brian Maher, they just all do a terrific job. The commanders of the Disabled American Veterans, the DAV, and the Marine Corps League was there, the VFW, the American Legion. They just do a terrific job. It's a terrific job.
Let's transition into talking about budgets. It's been a couple of weeks since the House decided passed its budget. Did you have a chance to play a role in this year's process, and were you able to glean anything for your communities?
I think regionally we always work together down here. There's really no, and this is something where you can say there's really no Democrat or Republican. We worked well. We've got funding for a number of priorities locally, SPED education and public housing. In Rockland, Norwell, the South Shore Votech continues to be a focus, and we have funding there. Where the river is always a focus. So Representative Carney picked up the mantle this time, and we got funding for the River Watch in the North and South River Watershed Association. And as a matter of fact, they recently had a grant as well to do some of the studies along the river was $400,000+, over $400,000. So there's a lot going on. My focus this year and in the grander House budget, we have a lot of programs that are grants, and we're going to be looking at helping, for instance, the local housing authorities. There's money for improvements. There's money for, to some extent, expansion. And so whether it be, Rockland, Norwell, the Cushing residences in Hanover, and right through the South Shore, I think that's something that you will find agreement on, that our housing authorities do a good job, and this budget is going to allow them to be much better funded and potentially expand a bit. We'll see how that works.
You mentioned expansion. We know the housing is probably a paramount issue, mm-hmm. where it's tougher and tougher to be able to find affordable housing, mm-hmm. or at least an affordable place to live, even if it's an apartment or a flat. It's skyrocketed because of the demand. Expanding housing authorities, does that help those folks who are over a certain age or folks who have disabilities but need to find housing?
Yeah, all of the above. Depending on the type of housing they have. Well, I'll give you a quick example of one that's going up, the former Holy Family School in Rockland. That type of housing is 100% support within the community, and it will allow over 55 housing individuals to be placed there and utilize a building that is in great shape but right now unoccupied. So right along the lines of what we did at the Cushing Center in Hanover. And there are, several other, throughout the region, there are several other examples of that. I personally am enthusiastic about a initiative by the governor, but also that Norwell has picked up, that will allow accessory dwelling units to be much more easily permitted and constructed in individuals' homes. So, for instance, if you had a house and it's a little bit larger, you had the ability to reconfigure it, you would be able now, under the new law that is proposed in Norwell, we're going to be able to rebuild a house, remodel a house, and you would be able to bring in a family member, someone with a medical condition, maybe an older family, bringing in younger people, or vice versa, younger bringing in older. And I think you're going to see that become quite common in our area and across the state. That will address housing. And of course, as the older people move in, they very commonly will be freeing up houses that they're living in, that in some cases they may have a little more than they need. And so it will allow them. That is a common complaint, that I'd love to sell my house and move to something smaller, but something smaller isn't available. Well, this will allow sons and daughters to reconfigure a part of a house and have a separate apartment for their older family members. So that's something positive that's going on. I should, if I can, just pop over, since we're on positive news and you've got me in a good mood here.
Yes, yes.
One of the really good things that we're doing as a legislature is having early education. And by that I mean early college. And that will allow current high school students to take college courses while they are in high school, which would apply to high school graduation and college credit. So it's you know, it's something that potentially could allow students to graduate early, mm-hmm. and go directly into you know, a community college or a regular college. I think that's going to become quite common, and my hope is that the students who are now in, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, by the time they're juniors and seniors in high school, that will be the standard. And in addition, when you see what's going on and what's planned for the South Shore of OTEC, you could have a situation where somebody in Norwell or Rockland or Hanover going to high school, but are able to take a plumbing program either at nights during the school year or during the summer. Or a specific trade. So there are a great number of possibilities, and it's all positive. I don't see a single drawback there, and I think to that extent, the kids who are coming up are going to have a lot more opportunity, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, you and I should have a roundtable discussion one of these times. Invite certain people, maybe. Yeah.
Dr. Hickey, certainly.
Dr. Hickey, yeah. Over at South Shore Volk and whoever's serving his chair at this particular time. Mm-hmm. Have them in and talk about, you know, the renewed push to to get into the trades, going to a trade school. And then, you know, graduating out, and then you're kind of ahead of the curve. Same thing you talked about, New Heights. I want to say New Heights Charter School in Brockton, mm-hmm. offers something similar, which you had mentioned, and that is just while students were going through the process, when they get into the leader grades, grade 11, grade 12, are also offered courses that commensurate with a community college like Massasoit Community College. And so when they're graduating with a diploma for high school that they've already earned or they've already accrued credits towards a degree, whether it's an associate's degree or something that's transferable to, like, a Bridgewater State University.
Right. Kevin, that was, by the way, under the late Dr. Sober at Boston University. That was a standard at BU Academy. Dr. Sober would... select, cherry pick, if you will, throughout the city, okay, talented students from everywhere. And that is particularly with a focus on neighborhoods where maybe they would not have the best education. And they were brought into BU Academy at no charge. And and given, you know, opportunities that for that they would no longer have. So it was not uncommon for a junior or senior at Boston University, Boston BU Academy, rather, to be taking undergraduate courses towards their, that would count towards not only their high school graduation, but towards college. So they graduate with the better part of, or maybe in some cases more, than their freshman year at BU complete. And by the way, when they graduated, they got full tuition to BU. So that is kind of that's the Cadillac of the program. But and it was a great program. It continues to be a great program. But just giving people the ability to expand either their curricula and or the ability to take college courses while they're in high school, I think I you can hear it in my voice. I think it's very exciting.
I think it's
and it's potentially, it saves money both at the high school and you know, as a father, how expensive college can be.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So wouldn't it be great if a son or daughter graduates high school with two or three semesters of college all done? How about that?
Yeah, again, as you said it so eloquently, and that is that it's not getting any cheaper between the tuition, if they're going to be staying on campus. Let's not forget how much they charge for books. I mean, the books are
out of sight.
Out of sight, for crying out loud. And they change them every couple of years, so you can't, you're lucky if you can go out and buy a used one, because, you know, the teacher might have changed it out every other semester. We're speaking with the state representative, Dave DeCoste, here for the State House Report and his regular update. We're very appreciative when all of our representation, whether it's the state reps, state senators, they come in on a regular basis on this particular radio program. And it doesn't matter what banner they're flying or what allegiance or what party they are a part of, they come in and we have a great conversation. I'm going to take a couple of things out of order because I want to finish up strong. I'm going to talk a little bit about the conference committee and where you think the budget is heading. And then we're going to finish up with the immigrants being able to get a license regardless of their legal status. We'll take that as last so we can finish up strong. Mm-hmm. Do you feel as though the budget, it's off to conference committee?
Right.
Could this end up signing into law earlier than the last several have?
Baker? You put, God willing, I think that knock on wood, am I allowed to knock on wood? Knock on wood here. That might be. And of course, our region is helped by the fact that Patrick O'Connor, Senator O'Connor, is typically on that. So we do okay as a region here in the South Shore. And my hope is that, plus, first of all, there's plenty of money. So as I alluded to, there's going to be all sorts of grant opportunities. And by the way, they're done fairly so that the more rural areas, are guaranteed a percentage, as is the urban areas. And it will be spread out. And I think we have a lot of things coming. And as you said, the hope is that things will be resolved quickly.
Mm-hmm. One would hope. I don't see anything that might be a snag in the negotiations or the discussions of the conference committee, but we'll end up seeing what happens. And you can't go wrong with the representation we have. You mentioned Senator O'Connor, and he's fantastic. I think all of you do a great job. Finally, I want to get your take on the legislation that's in the works. We know that it was passed by both branches of government, the House and Senate. Mm-hmm. Put on the governor's desk. Governor has veto, and this is, again, is to provide licenses, driver's licenses, to immigrants who do not have a legal status in this country. What's your thoughts? Because I know that the proponent of this is that there are 16 other states that are doing it, and that Massachusetts could be next in line.
A couple of them repealed it. But the bottom line for Massachusetts is I don't think it's going to do us any good. Certainly not going to do the taxpayers any good. You're talking about tens of thousands of new individuals speaking a plethora of languages that the folks at the Department of Motor Vehicles, Registry of Motor Vehicles, are going to have to license. And I have heard from a number of them in our district saying they're not prepared for this. They're not going to have any extra personnel. The requirement for the licenses, keep in mind, they're going to get the same exact licenses you and I have. Right. All right, so there's not going to be any way to discern that these folks don't belong here. There's a provision within the law that supposedly is going to assure that we know who they are. But, the 9/11 hijackers, the nine of them had 36 licenses between them. All right, and it is not at all difficult to get, for short money, certification, documentation that you are somebody, even though you're not. We've got that in our local sheriff's jails, where all of the sheriffs have individuals claiming to be somebody that they're really not.
Sure.
And that's with American, Puerto Rico, Massachusetts, a number of local bureaucracies that are producing bad paper. Imagine what it's like in a third world. So I don't anticipate this being adequately staffed. I think this is going to slow down service from all of our for our citizens. And then there are legal problems that we could probably spend 2 hours just talking about.
It's interesting you say that, because let's not forget there was a news story a couple of weeks ago. It might actually be about a month now, where you had one of the Registry of Motor Vehicles was actually just kind of rubber stamping folks' licenses without them doing anything, going for driver's tests. See, that's been a problem.
Well, she made hundreds of maybe millions of dollars. So she had a lucrative cottage industry there.
Very interesting. Do you feel that this has the necessary votes in the House?
Unless people really speak up to their senators and representatives, there's no question in my mind, at least on the South Shore, my gut feeling that this is, a 65 or a 70% against issue. I don't see any individuals, you know, coming out. And I can't tell you every single law enforcement individual who works in our towns has opposed it, who has made it a point to talk to me. I've made it a point to ask most of them. This is supported by no one in locally or certainly in the county level.
Anything you want to say in closing that we haven't touched upon, feel free to apprise folks of your re-election status and, you know, how they can get involved with your campaign or which reach out as a constituent.
Well, citizensforthecoast.com is always the easiest way to get a hold of us. They can send us an email or david.thecoast@mahouse.gov. You know, give us a call, We are working hard to do this, and I think in terms of re-election, where we've got a good team, both our re-election campaign and the team we're running in. I am proud to be running along the ticket on every individual on that ticket that we just had the convention, and whether it be you know, whichever of the gubernatorial candidates prevails, I'd be happy to run with them. So I'm looking forward to a spirited debate this session. And also, if I could, I wanted to again thank everyone who just did all the Memorial Day activities just so well executing, and in particular Daisy Troop 16467 and Norwell, who provided the two young ladies that gave us helped us lay the wreath. And that was a lot of fun. Really well done.
Excellent. There he is. State Representative Dave DeCoste, our guest for this segment. Representative, we look forward to seeing you again soon. We'll step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
The pandemic is over and life is finally returning to normal. It's time to return to McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman. Come enjoy Shepherd's Pie, a pint of Guinness, and one of the best pizzas you'll ever have on the South Shore. Play single Wednesday nights at McGuigan's or listen to the live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night. For comfort food with an Irish pub atmosphere, go to McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out the patio at McGuigan's next door at 552 Washington Street.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England every Tuesday night, 8 till 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. So coming up tomorrow night, a very special show. We'll be talking about the upcoming season at Bridgewater Music Alley, and I'll be joined in studio by president of Friends of Bridgewater Music Alley, Justin McCauley. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back here on 95.9W.
I took the Larry.
ATD.
I need these.
Yeah, you need those. Well, I wear them for quality control.
Okay.
The voice that you heard is none other than Anthony O'Brien Sr.
Yes.
District 12 Commander, Massachusetts.
Was, yeah.
Was,
yeah.
How are you?
Big job.
Retired Navy SEAL?
I'm as good as you can be. I gave, I was honored to give some remarks in my native hometown, Brockton, today, alongside the mayor. And the beautiful, and I don't mean beautiful just physically, but they have a new veteran service officer there who took the place of Dave Farrell. Kelly Young, who is currently
an active Army Navy Guards man, Guards woman, and just a super lady, young lady. I meant to ask her today if she was the first female in that job. Big job. I mean, obviously, big city, 100,000 people.
Indeed.
Killer parade today, and I'm telling you, I went up to the podium. And I've been there before, and just looked out on this crowd. And you know, you've been there a million times, the amphitheater at City Hall.
I have.
And I was like, well, I took a step back. I looked at the mayor. I says, wow, this is Brockton.
Honestly, I mean, I got a list of questions here because this is the reason why I have you here. And this is the reason why you're my guest, whether it's Memorial Day or Veterans Day. And we know there's a difference between the two.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But...
And the folks do.
But I have, you and I have known each other probably, what, 20 years? Somewhere around there?
Too long.
but being a multimedia person, I have seen you. I've been amazed at seeing you not only speaking and giving remarks on a solemn day like Memorial Day.
Yeah, you gotta.
Or when you are in a school,
yeah,
and you are, I've seen you many times, we've produced programming where you're teaching the next generation or next generations about the individuals who went and fought so that they could be free and so that they can, you know, have the freedoms that they do. And I've seen you and how you interact with them always astonishes me because you command their attention. And we're talking, again, and you have two of your own. So,
oh, God, yeah.
But the, you know, the individual.
Smoochie and Meatball.
Smoochie and Meatball.
They're too good.
I don't know how they're still.
They're great.
How they like that nickname out there. But it's.
The Meatball is now J-Dog. The J-Dog. Yeah, sorry. So, no, I appreciate your kind words, brother. It's a labor of love. There's many of us doing it. DeCoste is doing it. Major Dave DeCoste just left. There's a lot of us out there doing it. And there's a lot of folks out there doing it that do it. You know, maybe they're not. I'm no gifted speaker. I'm no Shakespeare. But there's a lot of folks out there that don't. Maybe you don't see it in a microphone, but they're doing a lot of hard work behind the scenes. Kelly's a perfect example. I mean, brand new on the job, threw this thing together. And so are a ton of ESOs in this region, Sarah's and Whitman. Just a lot of great people doing a lot of great work on behalf of the veterans community. And yes, the tentacle reaches out when you're talking about the kids. And for me, it's a no-brainer because even before I had my own kids, I was that rare single dude without kids who was coaching Little League. And once in a while, we get a, and it's like, relax, it's all good. I love sports, I love kids, I love coaching. Deal with it. By the way, you don't have anybody else.
But what's I find interesting, and I'm going to mention a friend of ours who has passed on, the Silver Fox, George Cataldo.
I mentioned him in my remarks today.
Every year, yeah. Who I would approach, and I would ask him, I'm like, you know, here you are, you walked in this parade in Brockton.
In his 90s.
You know, this is somebody who served in World War II.
Yeah.
And asked him, I'm like, how does it make you feel knowing that, you know, some of you lost comrades? Do you feel as though people are turning out and are being respectful? Or do you feel that it's kind of lackluster? And he'd kind of defer to the latter and be like, I wish there were more people.
It's a little of both. I mentioned George today. I actually had I had a specific mission today, which was to talk about primarily Lou Tarantino, who I think you remember.
I do.
Who was a POW, recently passed. Yes. Was a POW World War II, made it to 99, recently passed, great guy, was healthy for a very, very long time. The family wanted me to speak on his behalf. Four of them came in from both Plymouth and family members, from both Plymouth and New York. He had one son, Tony Tarantino. He came in, great guy, great family. Of course, I spoke about Lou. I mean, that's so easy. Just positive, uplifting, just a super-duper guy, not a downer about his, you know, obviously struggles with, you know, having been in a POW camp for as long as he was. And being the leader he was in community service for veterans causes, etc. Of course, he was in the same group with Peter Lupica, another POW. You talked about Cataldo, Eddie Leonard. I mean, all these guys were just our heroes, and you know, the torch is being passed. I think you'd love this. Of course, I was Cardinal Spellman, and was in the theater program there, and ended my remarks today about Lou with you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Cataldo, and of course, as the MC here for so long, and I sang a couple bars of God Bless the USA. I mean, I actually sang it at the microphone. Wow. and in tribute
to him.
I've
heard you sing before.
You're doing well. I did the choir in church, still occasionally do the national anthem when asked, and so I'm not afraid of a mic or singing or speaking or whatever, and gladly will do it, because a lot of people won't, and that's cool. I certainly got my own style. I'm not polished, but we get her done. But I appreciate your thoughts about what we're doing. And it was from everything I'm hearing. I mean, I didn't get around like DeCoste did, but on Facebook, on text with a lot of folks, and a lot of great things happened in the towns today. And of course, the weather was just A+. So lucked out.
So I'm going to mention another name, and knowing that you had time in Whitman, Lieutenant John Fox, who was remembered as a hero for what he did, and you know, lost his life.
Unbelievable story.
Unbelievable story.
Part of the Marrow family, the famous Marrow family from Brockton. Of course, Gene Marrow, I believe, was the first African-American principal in the history of Brockton High School. Just so people know, Brockton High School has like 4,000 or 5,000 students there, peaked at like 6,000, has always been one of the biggest high schools in the country. And so a massive operation. I mean, a town all by itself. And Gene was the principal there forever. For a long time. I actually had a chance to golf with him a couple times in a couple of charity tournaments. Really, really funny guy. Smart. John Fox married into his family, and his burial place is next to the Whitman VFW. And so, of course, he's just treated with great honor there in Whitman and in the region. And it's so funny you mentioned that. Honest to God, I'm bringing it up on my cell phone. I had it was a very social day, and then I had this really nice walk from back to the start point at the War Memorial Building in Brockton from City Hall by myself, and I'm walking by banners that Kelly's team had put up. Kelly and Lauren and CC had put up banners along the telephone poles, and one of them was John Fox, Lieutenant John Fox, with his Brockton connection. And you know, his maybe in a brief synopsis of his story is they were in a battle in Italy in World War II, and basically had to call in fire support, artillery fire on his own position to save as many people as he could. This isn't just something in a movie.
Real life.
Without question, did it, and not only did he save some people in his own unit by doing it, and how strategically well done that it was done. He, of course, was killed in that attack. But then also, that contributed to days and weeks later advances that they made to help win that area that otherwise they probably would have not have done if his position had been overrun. I mean, it's a movie, it's goosebumps. You talk it too much longer. I mean, and he's on the list of incredible Americans. And of course, I got a lower award. I think the story goes he got a lower award after World War II, and of course, posthumous. But then I think it was President Clinton in the 90s that upgraded it to the Medal of Honor. And I'm a chatty Catholic. I talk to you all day. I get to stories like this, and it's like, I got nothing. It's so incredible.
But how important is it to remember these heroes, these individuals who, you know what? Yeah, it sounds like it's out of a movie, but it's actual. And it was a puzzle piece for us to be successful in Europe.
You hate to do the cliches, but, you know, freedom isn't free. These guys are the definition of it. And then I mentioned today in my remarks also the famous Pearl Harbor battle cry, you know, never forget. Mm-hmm. And we still never forget. And we is all of us. Brother, we need you guys in the media. You're the hardest working journalist in the region. I've said it forever. In the multimedia that you do. It's not just veteran leaders. We need the folks. We need the folks. Thank you for your service. Appreciate it. Gold Star families. Here we go. Thank you for your sacrifice. And like, what else do I have? The legacy that these Gold Star families continue of their veterans who passed in service is, it's amazing. You meet these people, you talk to these people, and they are just incredible. You put them on the pedestal that they deserve to be on. And then, of course, I say to those folks, we need you. We needed you when I was in. We need you now. They need you now. We've got people in harm's way right now. Sure. Not just in uniform overseas, but here in America, we're in police uniforms, firefighter uniforms, in harm's way. And I think one of the very important things we people in uniform need to say is look back at the folks and say, thank you for your support. And when you do that, man, you are truly patriots. And We love you, and we need you.
It's interesting you mentioned Gold Star families. We have a Gold Star son who's going to be joining us shortly, Richard Fitz Jr.
A good friend, yeah.
You're welcome to sit in on the conversation, or at least be a shadow on the wall.
Well,
or
he's actually a rock and roller, so I don't admit that he's a good friend in public. But his mom's a great friend. No, he, super guy. The legacy of that story. Talk about another movie. And, of course, that's what he's working on. No,
it's
great Abington family.
You're welcome to kind of sit in the car.
I don't want
to
steal.
No. But we have Travis Parkington also. Cool. And we're going to talk about, continuing this conversation with an El Goldstar family and somebody who is a veteran who has seen friends die. And it's
Rob did the story this morning, you might have heard. One of his segments of the story was Molly out in Hanson, who's running the Sante documentary, and about that incredible operation in Vietnam. And she's reached out to me, and I'm going to do whatever I can for fundraising, et cetera. There's so much going on, and it's all good. And this is the legacy, and we stand on their shoulders, and we owe them, and so we do what we do. And all these folks, I mean, all of us, we could be running a multi-million-dollar company and I'll be rich and on the beach, wherever. You know what? I'd rather be doing this. I've got more riches with this group of friends and this mission and the family, et cetera. I've got more riches than a millionaire, and I'll take it all day.
Any concerns that you look at all the political rhetoric these days, any concerns as a veteran, as somebody who recognizes the importance of a day like today, this weekend, that this too could also be affected by all the rhetoric we see in this country?
It's a great point, and I think it's one of the at least few issues that's a little insulated from that, and it's
people know how to separate.
Look,
the two.
I'm conservative. Yeah, I'm conservative. I was hanging out with Democrats today. All good. I mean,
in Massachusetts.
In Brockton.
Democratic stronghold.
They're friends. Yeah. I've never been super too heavy deep into the division thing. We're gonna disagree and we move on. When either side gets too extreme, that's when the division gets in a sideways direction and it gets trickier and tougher, and I'm not super comfortable there. I think we're insulated from that primarily because everybody's a patriot on Memorial Day weekend, Veterans Day weekend, and all the other July 4th, all the holidays, which is, that's really the critical fabric of this great country and our 240-something year history that I'm proud of, they're proud of. I shook a lot of hands today. I didn't ask them, what party they're registered in. We're good.
But you were happy to see a sea of people at the Rotunda area in the amphitheater at Brockton at Brockton City Hall. You
absolutely
very proud to see that
without question. And the Brockton High programs, ROTC, the band, the music programs. Sure. Nuts. I mean, I'm just ballparking at least 100 or more people just associated with those programs and those kids. It was hot out. It was 11:30, 12 o'clock. I mean, it was almost 90 degrees out, and they got these uniforms on. They're sweating their you-know-what off. And they were great. I had kids come up to me afterwards. You mentioned this, you mentioned that. That touched me. You connected with me. La, la, la. But it's like, wow, really? Cool. Some 15, 16
You do have
kid.
That effect.
It's,
I know you don't see it, but you have that ability to be able to connect.
And that's what you want to do. Yeah. But when you get the feedback, it's just, it touches you and it makes you want to keep going on. I mean, it's like hitting the good shot in golf. You keep coming back because it doesn't take much. But I did get a little bit of it. And I got to tell you, left, right, in the middle. I don't like the game where one side is more patriotic or the other side's more family oriented. The other side, I don't see it. Honestly, I think all the sides do this part of American pretty well.
Closing remarks to our listeners. Anything you want to say in closing in regards to?
My big message today was that Lou Tarantino, the 99-year-old, just such a great attitude. Attitude's a choice for all of us, and he always had a great attitude. I said one story. The guy would call. I'd see him a couple times a week. He's like a second dad to me. And he'd greet me with "Hi, handsome." Okay, I would tell him, I'd say, Lou, I've got way too many freckles for anyone to call me handsome. You know what he'd do? He'd lean in. Almost like he'd lean in and he'd go, I love you, kid. I was like, oh, man, you're killing me. Just the sincerity and the attitude of gratitude. And trust me, I'm not perfect and I flaw in this too. But it's just a message that I want to repeat. And I honestly, I just came to this weekend. Lou, lift others up. Lift others up. The more we all try to do that, life's not perfect, and none of the compartments in our lives are perfect. Do the best we can, try the best we can, and go Celtics.
He is Anthony O'Brien.
I know you're a sports
senior.
Guy too.
I am big sports
yes,
guy.
I know.
Might have to have you in for Celtics talk one of these times.
I love it. Are you kidding me? I'm falling it big time. She's got season tickets because she does a little brokering on the side. So we not for the playoffs, but for the regular season, and so we're huge fans.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for all that you do.
You got it, sir.
We're going to step aside. That's it for hour number one. It is in the books. Hour number two, coming up in just a moment. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Rock Legends, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Kenny Loggins is talented enough to write any kind of song, but he says the ones that resonate most with fans are deeply personal.
It's anything where I could write where it would really touch my heart or hit that place of vulnerability would then be more accessible to an audience.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Okay, let's start unloading the sod over here.
The grass is always greener when Haruka's Lawn Care does the mowing.
And then we want to get the flower bed started before lunch.
They need a new landscaping designer to keep their budding business growing.
Can we double check the incline here? This one needs to drain this way.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, my name is Alex Bazantin, and I'm running for Plymouth County Commissioner. I am the former chairman of the Abington Conservation Commission, former Abington Water Commissioner, and now serving in my second term as Abington Selectman. I am currently serving on the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. If you would like to learn more about my candidacy, please visit my website at alexbazantin.org or follow me on Facebook. I am Alex Bazantin for Plymouth County Commissioner, and I approve this message.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back. And joining us later this hour is Dr. Vimel Green. I got to check the first name. I don't know if it's Vimel or Vimel. She is a child development author. We're going to talk with her in regards to the sad shooting we saw down in Uvalde, Texas. Is it time to arm teachers? It's a conversation that we'll have. How do we protect our kids? It's coming up at 7:30. But right now, joining us, it's an honor to have these two gentlemen here in studio. I think this is the first time for Travis Parkington.
That's correct, yep.
He is. Hear those pipes? Say that again. Say hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hear those pipes?
I've been telling him that since I met him. It's like, dude, you have a God's gift.
It's a Barry White feel.
There you go.
Yeah.
host of Oscar Mike Radio. Enjoyed, I think it's just surpassed its 300th episode.
Five more to go.
Focusing on conversations with veterans' issues, podcast, also something that is seen on local cable.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. And then Richard Fitz Jr., who is a Gold Star son.
Yes, sir.
And I just went with the top three, writer, director, soundtrack, producer of 21 years of Hold the Flag.
I wasn't really the producer. The producer was Rudy Childs.
Okay,
but everything else kind of
producer.
Pretty much.
It was kind of almost.
We went back and forth with that. You know.
So, just out of the gate, I asked both of you, John, how busy were you respectively during this weekend, whether it's participating or attending in Memorial Day festivities and ceremonies?
Well, for myself, we kind of briefly talked about this on the way down here. It's always busy. There are times where I do have to pick and choose what to do and when to do it. I have a certain... I think a homage inside of me to stay with the local chapter named after my father because of the story. There's a lot of tight connections there. You know, a lot of these people I remain true to as best I can because they're kind of like an extended family. You know, they have been going for years, keeping my father's name alive. Not just my father, but you know, anybody in general. But they've been there since, you know, day one. Some of these people. So I try to do my best to include myself with anything that they're going to do. But you know, as the story has grown for you know what my story's about and my father and all that, that's it's been something that a lot more people start to reach out and ask if I can either be involved or whatever. So I have to be kind of balance it a little bit, you know. And this, quite frankly, on the other end of it, you know, it's sometimes it gets emotionally draining. It's kind of tiring, you know. So sometimes you have to try to balance all that and do your best to represent and show up and honor not just my father, but the whole what this day is about.
Sure.
But at the same time, sometimes it gets a little heavy, you know.
How about you, Travis?
Well, you know, to Richard's point, this is a weekend where I remember Marines I buried, and I didn't serve in combat, so these peacetime deaths that I experienced when I served hit close to home. I'm happy to be here, and they're not, and I feel they're lost still. It's kind of weird that, you know, it's been so much time, but I still remember certain things with great clarity from my Marine Corps experience. This Friday was really special. I got to go down to the Veterans War Memorial in Fall River with the Rolling Thunder New England. And that's comprised of Rolling Thunder, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, and Mass Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. And with the town and the local other Veterans Service organizations, they had a candlelight vigil. And I was really moved by how many non-military civilians were there as part of our moment and how they embraced that moment and how the town of Fall River wanted to say, hey, we are here for you. This park is here for you. And it really, you know, set the tone, you know, right that we're not forgotten. This is about remembering. Then they had their event Saturday that I covered. It was a great event with a lot of motorcycles and live music at Plain Ridge Casino. And kind of like him, you're going here, there, and everywhere. This morning in Abington, I'm at that ceremony, and then I'm rushing to Holbrook to cover another ceremony. So it's busy, but you know, I think this is why conversations like this are important, so we don't forget, and just it's nice to be able to talk about it now.
It's, you know, having Anthony O'Brien, seeing Tony O'Brien here earlier, and he was mentioning about, you know, being a Brockton and seeing a sea of people.
Right.
And I know we're just coming off of a pandemic where a lot of us were kind of closed off and you know, stay 6 feet apart.
Right.
And, you know, maybe this might be a knee-jerk reaction where it's, you know, let's get out to events. But it's hopeful that folks are turning out because they feel a sense of commitment to those who did give their lives in the many wars that we have either had amongst ourselves or we have been involved with. Travis, in the events that you were able to attend, did you see a nice, robust turnout?
I'd like to say yes, and not just a turnout of veterans and older, you know, Americans, but also young families.
Yep.
With their kids and dogs and, you know, kids asking questions. And, you know, we had they had a band yesterday of teenagers playing the whole entire time for free. They just want to be there and be a part of a moment. And that gives me, like, real warm fuzzies that you know, the younger generation still interested in what, you know, we did.
Same with you, Richard.
Well, I think, you know, one word that just stuck out to me, I got a little different end of it, was hopeful. And the gentleman that I, you may not know, but most of the time when we do have a parade or whatever, I'm marching with them, and I'm representing basically my father. I have my son involved, my mother, you know, the chapter's named after my father. But from my experience, I've seen, and it wasn't just COVID, it was, I can say many years leading up to that, that the participating, the people, audience, the people that come out to see the parade, you know, for many years, it was dwindling. Mm. And to see, to be involved with these older Vietnam veteran generation, I mean, these guys are, you know, sweating and doing all this work because they care about their brothers and what they served in this country, and they were used to, you know, some pretty big crowds after the initial, you know, negativity when coming home. In the 80s, things started turning around a little bit for them, and I can even remember when I first started getting involved, I mean, that was 10 people deep the whole parade route. You know, you'd barely see the whole parade route. You're lucky if you saw 10, 20 people. To see their, it's almost they're actually personally hurt and depressed by it, and I get it. And they're, you know, they're kind of going, scratching their heads, going, "Whoa, doesn't anybody give, you know, a care about this?" And that word hopeful just made me feel, you know, a lot about that. It's to see people come at these events. It changes how they, the veterans themselves, and all these people that are putting in the effort to keep memories alive. That changes their view.
You were on the show a few years ago,
yes, sir.
And at that time, you were close to completing the documentary, mm-hmm. 21 Years of Folded Flag. And my understanding is the idea of the particular documentary was to give some insight to your father's legacy, mm-hmm. Who was a member of Special Forces fighting in Vietnam, who lost his life during a mission to Laos, right?
Yep.
Since then, it's been released. Resounding success.
Yes.
Do you feel that the film itself was able to deliver what you originally intended as a story, again, of so many different soldiers who were involved? Your dad was a part of that common thread.
I think it did come across. What I really wanted to do, to up flat out honest with you, I originally did not set out to do a documentary. Mm. All I really wanted to do was start gathering information and preserving it. And, you know, my initial meeting with my producer, Rudy Childs, was really, to paraphrase everything, "Do you think you can help me? I need somebody with the technical knowledge and maybe some equipment to help me."
The eye.
You know, yeah. And, you know, and he, I say this in every interview, even when he's with us, the proverbial eye roll when I come up there with the Rubbermaid tote with VHS tapes. Now, these had all old, you know, news footage and all this from the story, but that wasn't my intention. But after a while, after a couple of meetings, we had talked, and everybody had said that I had such a great story, and they said this back when my father's remains were returned, the initial funeral was in January 1990, and you know, I was handed a new world, and everybody and their brothers telling me, "Oh, wow, you got such a great story," but it wasn't a proper time for me. I had to let everything absorb, really learn what it was all about, and just, you know, understand it. But it didn't dwindle about the story. And when I ended up deciding to do the documentary, by now, everything started to get declassified. Although they were sworn to secrecy when they did it for 20 years, it still technically wasn't declassified. 30 years later. Technically, if I might have this date wrong, but I think it was 1999 or 2000, somewhere, it was finally technically declassified, and they got the entire unit got a presidential citation. But when he was buried in 90 for the second time, it was all classified. So I was getting told technically it was classified information. So as I started doing this journey about this documentary, there's more and more people that came out and felt comfortable to talk about it. So now I'm actually hearing and learning stuff as I'm going out to interview people, meeting people, which blew me away. So to actually have the story come across to what I wanted, I would say yes, but it almost wrote itself as I went. We didn't have any script. I had a thought in my mind, and let's try to do this, and we pieced it together as we went, and every little new thing came out to be a segment. And I think now that I look back at it, and I say this a lot, I kind of put the carriage in front of the horse, although I wouldn't change anything. So meaning that because I found out so much more, so many different things, that there was no way I could fit it all into that format. And I did start writing the book version of it, which I will be chipping away at again. So I really think there's a bigger story that, you know, how things affect people. Danielle Rocco, who's a good friend of Travis and mine, has a show, and she was the one that kind of said this. There's a what was it, a domino of theory that happens, in effect, as these things go on, and how it affects people afterwards. And I think there's a lot of story that needs to be told, how that affects people after something like this happens. So did it come across, to get back to your question? Yes, it did. But there's a lot more to it.
You've had a chance to interview Richard Travis. So what would you say is the most intriguing part of his story?
That it's all real. This isn't like a Hollywood movie or Apocalypse Now.
You just make things up on the way, right?
This is all real. And I think to your point earlier, Richard, this is why I still connect with the story, because someone new sees it. And part of them can't believe that it's true. Like, this couldn't have happened. We would never do this to service members now. Sure. I mean, if someone dies, you might not know all the details, but you're not left in limbo for 2 decades. Mm. And this happened to this family. And you know, as I've gotten to know the Fitz family and the post at the in Abington, Massachusetts, I really do believe, Rich, that the story is still being told.
Right.
It's still rippling out there. So yeah. It's had a profound effect on me and the people who've watched it.
Interesting when you said you put the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. But I feel that every great artist, when they're painting their portrait, right? You can line all the great names up, and they all do it differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because they basically mm-hmm. you know, are doing it to their own the beat to their own music.
Right.
So to speak. And that's how I see it.
Well, for me, it was a medium that I've never done. I had never attempted anything. Now, the music, you remember, you know, I...
You still are.
You know, but it was off and on, you know. So, and that's kind of how I approached it. I said, well, let's try to look at this like writing a song in a way, you know. Take it somewhere. Everything has to flow, you know. But that's the only way I knew how to express it. And, again, with Rudy's... experience and technical ability, I was able to at least talk to somebody and be able to say, hey, how about this? And I needed somebody open enough to have enough faith into my vision and allow me to go, okay, you know, can you take this little part, move it to here? Like, literally, layman's terms, like that, you know what I mean? And so that really helped me use that creativity and put a little bit more of my vision into it, you know.
Again, we are speaking with Travis Parkington, host of Oscar Mike Radio. Great voice.
Thank you.
And Richard Fitz Jr., Gold Star son, and the person who has kind of helped put 21 years of Folded Flag in motion. Executive director, whatever hat you want to wear, but somebody who has been very instrumental in gleaning all that important information, timing being on your side to have those documents that the government's like, no, for them to finally be declassified. It's timing. It was important.
Well, you know what else was important, I think? On a day like today, there are, you know, thousands, if not millions, of stories like mine. Mine is very unique, but I think the concept of what I'm saying, it doesn't matter if mine's unique. It, what matters is there's soldiers and families that go through these things that if my story can connect with somebody like that, and at least even if they say, wow, I can relate to it, there's somebody else out there, then I did my job. You know, it's of course it's such a personal thing. Of course it's about my father, my story, and of course there's a certain amount of pride about it. But in the grand scheme, there's other people that need to see stories like this and hear it, quite frankly, because of this day. Flat out. They have to see this because, listen, you know what? I have my dark days, but I'm still breathing. I'm here, and I can do a project like that. And if it helps, then I'm good. I hope I help some more people. I hope they reach out, call me, talk to me, say, oh, wow, I went through this or that, you know? Or ask me a question. Hey, how did you do that? I don't care what it is. You know, if it helps somebody, it helps me. It's kind of cathartic, you know?
I want to ask you both a question in regards to you both experienced loss through whether it's a family member or through someone that you served with. When you see people not taking Memorial Day serious, were they more worried about, hey, open to the pool?
Yep.
Does it affect you at all? Or does it, you say, hey, it's human life?
Do you want to take that first? I know how I feel about
it. Go ahead, Travis.
It's a mixture for me. Yeah. On one hand, I get very upset because people live so blithely and just like this doesn't mean anything. But then on the other hand, I'm like, well, if these people I served with, people before me, didn't make this sacrifice, we wouldn't have this. So I'm very conflicted during this time. And appreciate anybody who takes a minute out of their day to say, you know what, I'm going to hang the red, white, and blue, or buy, you know, red, white, and blue napkins for the barbecue, because hopefully on some level they understand what this means. But I will say the commercialism, the crass commercialism, absolutely irritates me.
Welcome to capitalism, unfortunately.
Well, I think I've had a couple of experiences with this as of late. And I think when I was younger, especially before my father's remains returned, because again, this whole thing was kind of really started a completely different life for me. I agree with Travis's sentiment about he's conflicted, because without our freedom, we wouldn't be able to enjoy those things. And that's what we're fighting for. That's what they have fought for. There's one word that's been really bothering me the last few years, and I see it a lot. And I think out of sheer probably ignorance, a lot of people don't understand what they're saying. Their sentiment is very positive, but they say Happy Memorial Day.
I was going to say,
and I'm like,
that was one of my questions, is does it bother you? Because I will not say happy, because what's really happy about it?
Right, and this is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be fair in my own mind and step out of me to try to be fair to people when they say that, because I don't honestly, of course they don't mean anything bad. They truly want to say something positive.
Right.
But, and I can't make them step into my shoes or anyone else's shoes.
Yeah.
Right? I can't. But it's kind of, it almost becomes like a little inner personal mission in a way to try to say, hey, you got to think about that for a minute. Because it's, you know, in this day and age, and I hate to do this because I don't want to fall into this, but every little word or label can be offensive. I've never been like that, and I don't take advantage of that, you know? And I can, that's your thing. Okay, fine. But, you know, I could take that mentality right now and apply it to this. And say, hey, that offends me. You know, I don't. But there's a thought process here that I think I'd like to see some people kind of aware of, a little bit more of, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, if you have a chance at like a work event or a social event and someone says that, it's like, hey, you know, raise your hand and say, hey, we have Armed Forces Day for those who are serving now. Memorial Day for those who, you know, lost their life in service to our country. And Veterans Day is to celebrate those who served and still, you know, who came back. And I think that opens up a conversation and allows you to be informative without being, you know, a killjoy or, you know, not mindful of someone trying. Because to your point, Rich, I mean, I'd rather someone try to, you know, acknowledge and honor that than be so conflicted that they don't, out of fear for making me mad. That's not going to work.
Is there a way to better educate our population in regards to Memorial Day? I mean, regardless, I mean, let's be honest here. Sometimes people confuse it with Veterans Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, they want to say, you know, thank a veteran. Okay, thank a veteran. But remember, thank those who aren't here to be thanked, per se. Rich?
Well, I think that's a multi-pronged thing, you know. I think it all starts with at home, for one.
Being taught in the K through 12?
Schools, at home. You know, I personally think it's more of a home matter. I mean, I don't want to say people have to, but I think there's a lot nice. Different. It would be nice, but there's a completely different mindset now. You know, things seem to be breaking down or changing in a way that there's some traditional things that are missing. You know, and we don't have to stick to traditions, but it's nice to be reminded. You know.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, as a father, you know, the buck stops here, and it has to come from me. To my point about Armed Forces versus Veterans Day, I'll post a social media post saying, "Hey, here's a difference." And people have come up to me and said, "Hey, thanks for posting that. I didn't know the difference. So I didn't want to make a fool out of myself."
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing I tell their veterans. We can't get mad at civilians for not knowing what to do if we ourselves are not willing to, you know, educate in a positive way.
Right.
So, to your point, it's multi-pronged, but there's several different ways you can do it.
This is where we got to wrap things up. Wish we could talk for another half an hour. If folks want to see your documentary, is it showing anywhere? Is there a way for folks to see it on cable, Prime? What's going on?
Is it still up on your channel, too?
It is, yes.
Okay, so it's up on two different channels. We did a live stream last Memorial Day.
Okay.
And Travis helped us out via Oscar Mike Radio, and Danielle Rocco. What's Danielle's show again?
Devoted to a Soldier.
Devoted to a Soldier. So they did a two-pronged thing with me and just really knocked it out of the park. We left that up on YouTube. So you can go on my YouTube channel, which is Sons of SOG. And it's just look it up on YouTube, just 21 years Folded Flag live stream. And it's on yours.
Oscar Mike Radio.
Yeah.
So we did a YouTube. It's on Facebook. You can see it there. And
is it on one of the episodes of Oscar Mike Radio?
There's a special post just for it. Yeah, and you can search for it and find it. Absolutely.
And you can also go on my producer's website if you want to buy your own copy. And I think he's got a new website now. It's like www.rudychilds.com. But he's got all his work up there. He's got my movie up there. You can just buy it right from there if you want your own copy.
And what stages is the book in right now?
That got on hold probably about 3-4 months right before COVID. It got put on the shelf. I got about 10,000, maybe up to 12,000 words written already. Nothing's really organized. I hit it with from all angles. When I see a subject, I write little ideas just to remind myself and go, okay, I got to
organize it later.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just so I get the info down. So that's about 10,000-12,000 words now. But I have not even touched it since. I've been too busy. You know, too much going on. I got my studio going on and everything else that I'm trying to get ironed out. So when I get a little bit more time, I think I'll probably put like one night a week aside just to work on that, you know.
And next episode of Oscar Mike Radio, where can folks hear it, see it?
So you can go to OscarMikeRadio.com, my website, and check it out there. It's Thursday night, 8 p.m. on Facebook, YouTube, and other places. I'm talking to a country music artist from Nashville, Tennessee, who performed with a Marine veteran artist. It's going to be very interesting.
With your permission, I'd love to have you guys back as long as we're all still have a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Love to have you back and again continue this message and see where things go, hopefully next year. We'll see some.
Or before then. Thank you very much.
Even before then. Yeah, we talk exclusively about.
Yeah, things are going to start going pretty quick within the next six to 8 months.
I want to thank you both for coming in. Again, we've been privileged to have not only Travis Parkington from Oscar Mike Radio, but also Richard Fitz Jr., a Gold Star son, and also writer, executive director, soundtrack artist for 21 years, A Folded Flag. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Pleasure. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WHT.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
With summer coming, it's time to enjoy al fresco dining at the Patio at McGuigan's. The Patio at McGuigan's serves up dishes like Koji steak tips, 14-ounce pork chops, and chicken masala. Have you heard about the Patio Sampler Platter? It's a dish worth driving to. And you can enjoy live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night at the Patio at McGuigan's. Patio at McGuigan's is at 552 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out McGuigan's Pub next door at 546 Washington Street.
I'm Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny & Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme gimme that ding.
So gimme that ding. Tiny & Sons Glass. We'll fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back for final segment of Monday Night Talk. A great conversation with Richard and Travis. And again, we'll put the podcast up sometime this week. If you've missed any of the segments, keep that in mind. Also, we want to take a moment to thank our great sponsors, Tiny & Sons Glass, Signature Healthcare, and McGuigan's Pub. Our conversation now, we will focus and speak with Dr. Green. Dr. Green has been a school teacher and administrator for more than 45 years, also the author of Please Teach Me Like a Boy, 10 Steps to His Success in School and in Life. She is also an executive of the Boys Initiative. Doctor, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Kevin, hi. Thank you for having me.
No, I have to ask you, because I said Dr. Green. Is it Vermel?
Vermel, that's correct. Nice. Very good.
Right. Excellent. Well, welcome to the radio program.
Thank you again.
And let's first start. Tell us a little bit about your book. Please Teach Me Like I'm a Boy.
Boys learn differently than girls, and unfortunately, many teachers have not been trained or even informed about that. I know I hadn't been, and I was in the classroom for a lot of years, and even as an administrator, it wasn't until I was close to retirement when I began to do research as to why boys were maxed out in special education classes, and there were hardly any in the talented and gifted classes. Why our boys were getting suspended over and over and over again, getting in trouble, and began to just search around and read and found a book that said, Boys and Girls Learn Differently. And I thought about that. I said, well, my goodness, no one ever told me that. explains why he would do that and she wouldn't do that, and vice versa. So I wanted to put much of my dissertation in book form when I did research on how boys learn and how best to teach boys. And so this was my COVID book, you know, when they said, you can't go anywhere, you know, just stay home. I said, okay, I'll write a book. Please teach me like I'm a boy. 10 steps to his success in school and in life.
I will tell you that Amazon and Barnes & Noble have definitely benefited from the pandemic because so many people thought it would be something to do, sit down, I'm going to take my time dedicated towards that. You saw it as an opportunity not only to write the book but also as a dissertation. How long did it take you to put the book together?
Well, as I said, a lot of it came from my dissertation, my doctoral dissertation. So I would say I started right after they shut things down, and it was published about 4 months later.
Talk to me about serving as a school teacher and making the transition from being a school teacher to an administrator.
Oh, my goodness. Kevin, I have to go way back to that. And see, I taught... I started teaching in 1974, and I taught for about 8 years, but I wanted to do something really, you know, really different. So I left teaching and went to work for the Xerox Corporation. And Xerox at that time had all these former teachers running around because Xerox wanted the skills and talents that teachers had, you know, public speaking, organizational skills, being able to work unmonitored. But I was only at Xerox for about a little under 5 years and came back to teaching. In teaching a short time, and my principal began to promote me to administrative roles, and eventually I became assistant principal, dean, principal, and then I retired soon after.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, we're seeing more and more gun violence in schools. It's becoming common a common occurrence. You look at Columbine in Colorado, Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut, and now this the latest incident at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. In your opinion, what needs to be done to protect and preserve the educational environment moving forward?
Many of the relatively simple ways to protect our children are readily available. For example, in the inner city, you don't see many of these things kind of happening in the inner city or the urban schools. That's because they've already initiated very good security measures, single entrance, metal detectors, resource officers in the schools. And you usually find these kinds of incidents happening where people feel kind of relaxed. It was such a tragedy in Texas, and when you found more and more details about how someone left the door open, oh my goodness, you know, when I go to visit a school, either as a visitor or even occasionally I'll substitute teach, oh my goodness, you would think I was getting into Fort Knox, because the area where, you know, where I serve, it is suburban, urban. Administrators have to embark on strict training of the teaching staff and even the students. An environment is so necessary for the students to realize, you know what, students, if you hear something, say something, if you know something, you're not being a snitch, you're not tattling. What you're doing is informing those who could help keep you safe and keep your friends safe and keep your teachers safe. So also with parents, letting the parents know that if they in conversations with their children or their older students, you know, if they find out that something is a concern or something is amiss, or if the student saw something on social media, please speak up. Inform those who can do something. those kind of measures would be best. I would hate to see also money that's being, you know, poured into schools. Schools are getting more money than they have ever. I remember when I was in a school, if we had a budget of $10 million or something, some crazy numbers like some of these school districts are getting, oh my goodness, we wouldn't know what to do with it. And that's what's happening. So hopefully a lot of the money that's being poured into school districts are being used for some of those very same security measures that you find in many urban or inner city schools. Metal detectors, resource officers, security, cameras, and especially locked doors.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with child development author Dr. Vimal Green, and we started out talking a little bit, get a little background, talk with her about her book, and then talk about guns in schools or protecting schools. I know my next question is going to be somewhat crazy and something that an educator probably wouldn't want anything to do with, but is it time to arm our teachers, or is that the wrong approach?
Well, you know, Kevin, I think that if those teachers who are comfortable with carrying a concealed arm, if they have been trained, it's not that they... they inherited a gun from their uncle, and you know they've been keeping it in their closet, and now they're going to bring it to school. No, if they have been trained, licensed, and have a cool head about them, well, you know what? It could be a deterrent. I would hate for it to get to the point, though, where teachers have to carry firearms. I think this whole movement that was coming through the schools a year or so ago about removing resource officers, I hope those people are now putting tape over their mouths and saying, we were wrong. We don't need to get rid of our resource officers. Right. Because they're keeping our schools safe. It was part of that whole defund the police, and it was filtering into the schools as defund the school resource officers. So hopefully, if we have resource officers who can handle the hallways, who are there, it's not just one officer in a school, you know, of 1,000 kids. Hopefully it's more, and keeping their ears open, and, you know, the teachers won't have to resort to defending themselves and defending their students.
Well, it's interesting because that question is something I thought I would ask, because the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, it's been reported that he has not only called for teachers to be armed after tragic shooting, 18 students killed, one adult. But he's also calling for armed police at schools. I mean, is that what we want? We want the resource officer to not only be there to work with students, but also be their protector?
I think so. And I tell you why. For one thing, the school resource officers at the schools where I have been part of the school family. They haven't been, you know, just some nameless person standing in the middle of the hall with his arms crossed. No, they have become an integral part of the whole school community. You know, forming relationships with the kids, especially when those resource officers are male. You know, Lord knows we need more men in the schools. You know, we don't have that many men teachers, you know, compared to women teachers. But being able to have relationships with the kids and have a kind of camaraderie with the rest of the staff as well. So when a resource officer is brought in, and the kids see him or her, and they become familiar with them, and they become familiar with the school and take on a protector role for the school, I think that's an excellent idea. I think it's an excellent idea. One thing I would really caution districts about is pulling policemen right off the street, right out the squad car, and putting them in schools, because it does take training. The kinds of decisions and actions that you would make if you were out on the street corner dealing with the drug dealer thug, you know, break into a store, is going to be different than you would with, say, a back talking teenager in the hallway. And I think that's what happened in a couple of schools where I, you know, read about the school resource officer tackling the student, handcuffing the student, dragging the student. You know, they just have to be trained and realize that they have to treat some of these children with kid gloves.
See, one would think, though, we are so advanced. I mean, when it comes to technology, not only as a nation, but I think globally, you know, technology leaps and bounds, especially during the pandemic. I mean, we were able, you know, that we as a society were able to find a way to inoculate our population in a short amount of time. And, you know, also use technology to at least still have school using platforms like Zoom and Teams. Could technology also play a bigger role in securing our schools?
Oh, yes. You know, there can be an extra, you know, eyes in the hallways. If there was some kind of way that the office would have a direct line instead of having to pick up the phone or the teacher in the classroom having to pick up the phone to call the office, and then the office has to then call 911. If there would be some direct line to law enforcement, you know, that could help. Again, like I said, the good old-fashioned security cameras, you know, the Ring doorbells, which are installed in a lot of schools in our area, you know, that kind of technology, very, very effective against keeping the traffic to a minimum and making sure that you're monitoring who is coming in and out of the school building.
Now, there continues to be calls for stricter gun laws, especially on the federal level. But is that enough?
You know, I hate to wade into that whole debate. All I can say is this, that the Constitution of the United States guarantees in the Second Amendment the right to bear arms. And I would hate to see tragedies, although heartbreaking as they are, like this, to use to take away Americans' right to bear arms, because it's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope, Kevin, that, okay, now we're going to take away these. Okay, now we're going to come back and take away these guns. Now we're going to come to, you know, and I don't want a disarmed America. I just don't. And people look at me, you know, as a black woman, they're saying, oh, you know, it's your people who are really, you know, suffering the violence and you know, that's happening in the cities. And that's true. But then again, the guns that protect my black people in the cities hopefully outnumber the guns that don't. And so there are a lot of times that those guns are helping people, be they the police or security or even private individuals defending their homes. And I would hate to see that tragedies like this are used against the Second Amendment.
Would it be better to say that the more paramount problem is mental health, and that we haven't done enough when it comes to the area of mental health and identifying folks who need assistance? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all, Kevin. I think you're spot on when you call it mental health, and also, you know, as a Christian, I have to say spiritual health as well.
Right.
When you have people who aren't, or especially young people, who aren't raised with a moral sense that would instill compassion and kind of protect them from this seemingly culture of death that's out there in our society, you know, that is really plaguing our young people. You know, they've already gone through the trauma of a pandemic, you know, with depression, you know, at all times high, self-harm, suicide rates, especially among our boys and young men. And, yes, that definitely has to be a part, the mental health, but also the spiritual health. I would love to see our faith leaders step up and become more involved in a more vocal proponent for helping our young people through all of this.
If you are just tuning in, we are privileged to be speaking with Dr. Vermel Green who wrote the book, Please Teach Me Like I'm a Boy, 10 Steps to His Success in School and in Life. You know, you mentioned about the pandemic. Is it possible that our society has become angrier because of the pandemic and that we're going to see residuals like what happened in Uvalde, Texas, more?
I know our children are angry. People aren't as nice to each other as they used to be. I mean, I'm just thinking about road rage. We just got back from a trip out of state for the weekend, and you know, just the way people drive and just the aggressiveness, and you know, threatening people that they don't know because why? I was just changing lanes. My goodness, I'm not trying to hurt you, really. I'm not. And it's just an anger that's out there, and of course, it filters into our children, and it's in the media. Of course, you turn on the. I've gotten to the point now where I can't even watch the news because it's just hate and anger and killing and hate and anger and killing and a steady diet of that is bound to get into your spirit and to your psyche until finally you're saying, oh my goodness, do I need to just check out early? And you wonder why people are depressed and suicidal after you suffer through all that. And our children are not immune. They are not stupid. They can see the angst in the adults around them. They're like little thermostats. They can tell the temperature, in the environment, be it at home or be it at school or be it out in the community. And so, yes, I think that the pandemic has done a number, but I'm an optimist in the fact that the great American spirit is not dead. I think that God has his hand on this country, and I really believe we're going to come back.
But interesting, talking as a Christian, and as you look, I mean, some would say that, the way things are digressing globally, that, that we're heading towards the end times.
Hey, Maranatha, come Lord Jesus. But part of me is saying, well, no, not part of me. I would say 99% of me is saying, yes, Jesus, come on. Yeah. But then another part of me is like, Lord, I would love to see you turn things around and see a revival to sweep. I'm old enough to remember the Jesus movement of the early 1970s. Oh, my word, that was an exciting time in this country. And I would love to see something that would even surpass that to sweep across this nation and sweep around the world so that people are saying, wow, look where we were and look at where we are now.
But I'm going to ask you this, and that is you look at religion, you look at what we've seen with different religions, whether it's the Catholic religion and the scandals we've seen in regards to priests and sex scandals. Is it hard for folks to believe a religion when those who are providing the word are up to other things?
Well, you know what? First of all, I don't follow religion. I don't consider myself religious. I consider myself a Christian.
Yep.
And I think that those people who really have a relationship with the Lord, where it's part of their being and it's part of their thinking and their doing and their heart, I don't believe they are the ones that are involved in this. When religion gets into it, anything can happen because, man has a propensity to sin, to do wrong. And whether he wears a collar or a frock or if he has a R.E.V. in front of his name, So these kinds of things happen. So people need to get their eyes off of man because man will fail you.
Yes.
And get your eyes on the Lord.
Well said. As we are coming to the close, we just got a couple of minutes left here. Anything in closing in regards to our topic in regards to the sad happenings down in Uvalde, Texas, and thoughts on any possible future shootings that we see like this?
Well, the main things that parents can do because it may happen again. I pray that it doesn't. I pray that schools are putting very simple measures into place. At the same time, I want to tell parents, please hold on to your children, love your children, make sure that they are feeling safe, make sure that they know that they can talk to you, because our kids for the past 2 years have gone through such trauma. And it will be interesting to see how they're doing in another 30 years from now. But in the meantime, parents, step up, support your schools, support your children, support your teachers. Hold those teachers accountable, though. Don't let them off the hook when it comes to teaching those values that you hold dear. But definitely hold your children, talk to your children, be there for your children. They are the most important resource that you have. Your children are a message that you send into a time that you will never see. So, parents, make sure that that message that you send is a good one.
And let's have folks, if folks want to grab your book, is it easy to attain? Is it Amazon? Is there a website they can go to? Is it Barnes & Noble?
It is on Amazon, Amazon.com. Please teach me like I'm a boy. It gives a book, a list of strategies to teach your sons. It will be for parents, for teachers, for educators, knowing how to teach boys in a way that they learn best. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also Apple iBooks.
Now, before I let you go any further, one piece of business we haven't touched upon, and that is the Boys Initiative. Could you give us some details on that in case there are folks who are interested?
Absolutely. The BoysInitiative.org. We are an advocacy group raising awareness on the issues affecting our boys. We have a weekly newsletter filled with tips on parenting boys, teaching boys. We also have news articles regarding boys' issues. Many of them are not reported in mainstream media. We also have training opportunities. In fact, I'm doing a webinar tomorrow on how to teach boys and how boys learn best. We have an upcoming seminar in October. So all you have to do is go onto our website, theboysinitiative.org, and sign up. Thank you, Kevin, for allowing me and reminding me to mention the Boys Initiative. We appreciate that.
Yeah, it's you know, I was looking at the website and I was finding it fascinating that there is somewhere to go to, you know, help boys and understand that there's a difference between boys and girls. And, you know, if you have, you know, three sons, that, you know, that maybe this is something that, you know, if it's going to be of value to get involved with.
I hope so. In fact, we've got four networks for teachers, moms, dads, and also the faith community. Those networks are designed to give you information to equip you to advocate for your son, because our boys need someone speaking up for them, to school boards, to legislators, to policymakers, saying we must do more to help our boys, because if our boys are in trouble, so are we all.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and talking about so many different topics all in one phone call.
Oh, wow. It has been a lot, hasn't it? Kevin, thank you again for this opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners.
You have yourself a great evening, and hopefully we can talk again somewhere down the road.
All right. Just give me a call. I'll be there.
You got it. It's Dr. Vimel Green, who has been our guest here on 95.9 WATD. What a fantastic show. I want to definitely take a moment to thank all of our guests this evening, from State Representative Dave DeCoste to Anthony O'Brien, Tony O'Brien Sr., who stopped by, Travis Partington and Richard Fitz Jr., and telling Richard, sharing his story in regards to the documentary 21 Years of Folded Flag. Great to have him in, because, like I said during our interview, that, you know, last time we talked to him, it was you know, in the works. He was Rudy Childs was coming in, and, you know, it was, you know, they were going to start moving forward with it. So it was great to have him in, and again addressing what today is Memorial Day. A day to remember those who gave the ultimate sacrifice in order for us to experience the freedoms that we currently have here in this great nation. Want to also make sure that we remind you that we are a couple of episodes behind on the podcast, and we will do our best to get those up as soon as possible. Hopefully by the end of the week we'll be up to date. So keep that in mind. Hey, listen, till next week at 6:15 p.m., you have yourself a great evening.